Welcome back to Coast AM. And we're talking about this ongoing phenomenon of geoengineering and how it is playing out all around us. My guest is Dane Wigington. His website is geoengineeringwatch.org, which I saw as a flyer on a wall in Mount Shasta, which kicked off this whole thing. Although I've been into the subject for a very long time and have been really investigating it, not just where it came from, but where it's going and all that it means. It's huge, and it's going to get bigger and bigger. I promise you, it's going to be one of these subjects that is going to become part of the mainstream discussion and conversation. And Dane, right before the break, we were talking about how you were suggesting that Hurricane Sandy was somehow manipulated and changed. What kind of technology have you seen that can actually alter a course of a hurricane?
We talked during the show, Rob, about the ionosphere heaters and what they can do to the atmosphere. Mm-hmm. And the stated military strategic purpose of the ionosphere heaters in heating the atmosphere is to cause a bulge into space, which would, in theory, create resistance to an incoming ICBM and thus burn it up. But this also creates voids underneath such a bulge, which can create, add to a low pressure area and help to steer a storm. Also, aerosolizing the disbursement of these particulates in the right region of the storm could have the same effect as well. And again, if this wasn't a demonstration, I don't know what was. I mean, hurricanes, to know that it would make a 90-degree turn 7 days ahead of time is beyond belief. And let's also consider that who does the modeling for NOAA, National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, and the National Weather Service? Raytheon. Private defense contractor, Raytheon, does their modeling. Same private defense contractor that's up to their neck in weather modification. Who does the climate modeling for the FAA? Lockheed Martin. So you have the foxes literally running the hen house. So in the case of Hurricane Sandy, that's one example. We also have at the Cancun Climate Conference and the Copenhagen Climate Conferences, isn't it astounding that both of those conferences at the time of the conference had record low temperatures in spite of warmer than usual temperatures in the surrounding regions? How is that possible? And wasn't that a demonstration as well? So climate engineering has profound effects with very negative consequences overall, and we're seeing a lot of those consequences. And you mentioned also, can hurricanes be suppressed? Again, doesn't anybody wonder why we haven't had a repeat of the 05-06 season with major hurricane impacts? Even Discovery Channel, in one of their shows subsequent to 05-06 season, stated the U.S. was expanding its hurricane suppression programs, and it is astounding that we haven't had a major impact since, because Sandy was not a major hurricane, and we have patented substances for this purpose. DynoMat, patented substance to suppress the convection in a hurricane and slow it down. And here's where it gets complicated, Rob. You have every major media outlet. I'm looking at, you know, there's one article from USA Today I'm looking at right now, attempts to weaken and destroy hurricanes. They'll, in order to confuse the public, they'll talk about this sort of technology, but then they'll always end up with, but it's really not possible and we really couldn't do it. So the people just abandon any notion that this is real. Also, when it comes to putting particles in the atmosphere, and this should point out how ridiculous some of this denial is, you have the major publications stating that, well, we could suspend a hose from the ground with balloons to pump these aerosols out. Well, who would do that when you have a jet that can carry, in the case of a KC-135, 100 tons of this payload to altitude with no trouble, and you don't have some sci-fi scenario? This is just red herrings. They talk about space mirrors, suspending a hose from the ground. People need to understand this is all mass distraction, all to throw people off the scent, all to take away from their focus on the fact that you can see a jet aircraft above you spraying this stuff. So people need to be a little more astute.
You talked about these atmospheric heaters, and that's sort of another way of talking about these HARP installations, right?
Ionosphere heaters, yes.
Yep. Now, HARP, you can look it up, HARP, was a real installation up in Alaska. It's just been decommissioned.
Actually, it's still on. In fact, that just to set the record straight on that, it's the second year in a row where a lot of rumors flew. They tried to put an end to all the conspiracy theorists. They said we're shutting this down, which proves we never used it. It's just been extended again for the second time for several more months. So just to set the record straight.
Well, who's flipping the bill? Because I thought that was sort of part of it. Who's going to, maybe they thought a local university was going to take over the cost of running it.
They keep saying that. DOD keeps footing the bill. So we'll see how far it goes. And even if they took down HAARP, again, there's over two dozen land-based huge facilities. There's SBX, sea-based X-band radar. There's a lot of smaller facilities around the globe. So, you know, there's quite a network of them. Okay. People can look this up.
Yeah, because we keep hearing about that. All right, so that's the latest then. Well, I remember Dr. Nick Begich, just on this program, and I believe he was talking about HAARP and said that they were using it one time and really blasting the upper atmosphere, and they actually altered the course of the jet stream. Did I hear that right? Am I remembering that right?
You are. You are. And in fact, let's carry that further. And Nick is certainly the recognized expert. In fact, when they put out the rumors the first time on shutting down HAARP, I called Nick directly and confirmed what I thought and what I felt data stated, that they were not, in fact, shutting it down. They still haven't shut it down. But again, when you can create these different pressure zones in front of a jet stream movement, you can steer it. And we see some incredibly anomalous jet stream activities. Let's look at this last winter in the U.S. Constantly locked in a high-pressure ridge that the meteorologists are all scratching their heads over the Pacific Northwest, pumps the jet stream straight into Alaska. Alaska had the warmest January on record, something the media didn't report. Then that jet stream hooks back down into the U.S. Southeast, where it's been cooler than average for a very long time. And these jet streams are locked into place with movements, this polar vortex that is a new term from the Weather Channel that we saw last winter. We just saw it in the summer. In fact, we just had a cool down that they call the summer polar vortex. They invent this stuff up as they go.
Yeah.
Now we have ionosphere heaters in the southern hemisphere, and guess what? We just had a, quote, polar vortex in Australia. I mean, this stuff is so blatantly obvious once you start to see the whole picture and what they're doing, and they are going for broke. I assure you, they are going for broke with no comprehension as to the consequences.
Well, HAARP, if anyone who's ever seen a picture, and for those who haven't, it's basically a field of antennas, and you know they just shoot this microwave energy, you know, sort of straight up, or they can direct it. I wonder if you know anything about the possibility of a HAARP-type array that can be put on a ship or on the back of a tractor trailer.
Well, yeah, this is, you know, in regard to the floating installations, again, people should Google this because the pictures would astound them. Google SBX radar images, or radar and then images on Google, excuse me, and you'll see what looks like a science fiction picture. It's a massive, massive floating facility. It looks like a oil derrick on steroids with a massive white ball and several other surrounding balls, and this is one of the mobile facilities. Another one was just put in Japan, by the way, with a staff of about 100 U.S. DOD personnel. So this is really a tool of choice for weather manipulation. And to give people an idea, anybody who knows anything about radio frequencies, we're talking about, in the case of HAARP, some data indicates as much as 3 billion watts of power out of there. So anyway, the amount of power that they can put out is astronomical. And this is something that is having profound effects on the atmosphere. And the data is there to back this up again. And the amount of these facilities around the globe is astounding.
Yep. I want to ask you about drones, but we're going to take a quick break and come back first. We're talking with Dane Wigington. His website is linked up right now at Coast to Coast AM. We're coming right back. All right, you're back on Coast to Coast AM, and we're talking about weather modification. And Dane, I want to talk to you about drones. They're everywhere, and they're multiplying every single day. There's thousands of them in the air right now, and it's projected in 2016 there's going to be like 5,000 and even more. I mean, it's a huge air force out there that's all unmanned. How do you see drones playing in to some of these cloud seeding, some of these manipulation technologies?
Well, that's a great question. There's a lot of speculation on that, and the speculation is that a lot of these spray tankers are automatic piloted, but we can't really know that. And although the technology exists, we do know that. It would seem that certainly a lot of these aircraft probably are piloted. In fact, I spoke face-to-face with a KC-135 pilot who didn't know really what he was doing up there. And when he went back to ask questions about that, the last data I was able to get about him from a mutual friend was he was medicated behind a desk. So apparently asking questions was the wrong thing to do. I have not seen him since. So yes, this technology could absolutely exist. In fact, if people Google this, they've been able to land and take off and fly large aircraft-like tankers for two-plus decades. So, I mean, we know the technology exists. But also we have dialogue, Rob, from, in fact, one of the inside people I've talked to, and I can't corroborate this data. I believe he is who he said he was. But he told me that some of these pilots, although they don't talk about it openly, what they're involved with, they consider themselves and call themselves spiders, as if they're weaving a web up there. And indeed, it looks like a web. It looks like a spider weaving a web. So it does appear that there's pilots involved, and how many might be drones, we could only speculate, but certainly the technology is there.
Mm. Has there been any whistleblowers that have come forward?
Kristen Magan, and I've had numerous phone conversations with her. She's a courageous gal, 12-year Air Force industrial hygienist. Now, most people don't know what that means. It's actually a much more technical vocation than people understand. It's their job is to test for pollutants and the sort of contamination that we would see around things like air bases and so forth. And Kristen has stated on the record that she has seen the aluminum canisters. She's seen the materials being loaded. She's tested for it around the bases. She was reprimanded for doing so. And we see the same sort of thing, in fact, through all agencies. Now, I, as recently as 3 weeks ago, spoke to a California Fish and Game biologist who has told me again that she is absolutely hammered if she even mentions anything that could relate to this issue. I just spoke to a former Lockheed Martin employee who has had communications with 100 of her former coworkers and tried to get data out, and they have told her that they are not allowed to say a peep about this. Another scientist, lab manager from Duke University, same thing. She's been pulled into a room twice there and told if she continues to discuss this issue, there'll be consequences. I assume that means she'll lose her job. But and you have other big agencies, very glaring things, Rob. The state of California stopped testing for aluminum in their water in 2002. Why would that be? Fish and Game, California Department of Fish and Game, again, stopped testing for aluminum in all their runoff. In fact, 135 other elements are tested for, but no longer aluminum. And I have a list in front of me now, updated 3 days ago, of the rivers considered pristine recreational rivers, fishing rivers, that are now considered contaminated with aluminum.
Mm. Well, then that brings up what I started off this show with, is these clips of this hearing that was held by State Senator Kelly Ward June 25th. And we reached out to Kelly Ward to have her come on this program, but she declined. Now, she brought in one of her people, Sherry Zendry, who is administrative counsel with the Arizona Department of Environmental Quality. You're aware of this public hearing, weren't you? Public forum, weren't you?
I am. Yep. I've spoken to the organizers of it, yes.
Okay. And do you think anything really productive came out of it, or do you think that it was the start of something, or was it simply just to placate the people who were speaking up?
I think on the part of the elected officials, to a certain degree, they're trying to put out a fire, but I don't think they did. And I think the event had a large degree of benefit with it. And we have since followed up in Shasta County, where a lot of homework has been done prior to, as I mentioned to you off the air, we've just had a unanimous decision of all five Shasta County supervisors to engage in an ongoing investigation for these contaminants, because that was our point with going before the supervisors. We realized those supervisors cannot stop these programs. That's clear. But what they can do, and what they should do, and what they must do, is disclose the contamination, which is an indisputable, verifiable fact. And they've agreed to continue on with this. And what's more interesting, we had the CEO of the largest environmental consulting firm on the planet that was going to speak in Shasta County. And 5 days prior to him speaking, after having an invitation from the supervisors, the head of the Shasta County Air Quality took it upon himself to reach out to this CEO and inform the CEO that, in fact, the county had contracts with his firm, and immediately the CEO called me and said he couldn't come. Now, why would this official take the time to do that if it wasn't to just make sure that his testimony wouldn't happen, and didn't tell the supervisors about this? And then at the day of this event in Shasta County where we had this unanimous decision, In a very long, ambiguous rant, this air quality official made it clear that they do no testing that could possibly show these particulates, and that's what people need to understand. All the PM10, 10 micron, PM2.5, 2.5 micron testing that all air quality organizations and agencies do, those particles are exponentially larger than what we're talking about. So all the nanoparticulates go completely under the radar because none of these agencies test for these particulates, period. You can't catch a minnow in a tuna net. You can't, and that's what we're talking about here. If I could give a little clarification on the whole contrail, geoengineering particulate trail theme, if people simply Google, or they look at our site, we have in the center a tutorial of a high-bypass turbofan jet engine. This jet engine is standard on all commercial aircraft, all military tankers. This engine, by design, 80% of the air that passes through this engine is non-combusted. By design, this engine is almost incapable of producing a, quote, condensation trail, except under the most extreme circumstances. So people need to understand this. And also we have global dimming. This is a term that most are unfamiliar with. As of the latest statistics, we have 20 to 25% of the sun's direct rays that reached the surface of the planet 5 decades ago no longer do. It takes an incredible amount of particulates in the atmosphere to block that much sunlight. That is the express goal of climate engineering, solar radiation management, stratospheric aerosol geoengineering, to block the sun. That's exactly what we see, and that's what got me onto this fight. Rob, my home was on the cover of the world's largest renewable energy magazine. It's my background with Bechtel Power. When I started to lose massive amounts of my solar PV uptake from whatever these aircraft were doing in the sky, blocking tremendous amounts of solar, that's what started me onto this fight to begin with, because I'm not an activist. I'm not politically minded. I didn't want this fight. But knowing that you can't take a breath without this stuff being sucked into your lungs, absorbed into your bloodstream, as we know from internationally recognized neuroscientists like Russell Blaylock, we know the effect of the human body. What do? You stand up and start fighting.
Yep. And as I mentioned, there is a big march happening September 27th. The website, I believe, is Global March Against Chemtrails and Geoengineering.com. But if you Google that, I'm sure you'll find something that will steer you in the right direction. Well, we're sort of coming up to a break here, but when we come back, we're going to take your phone calls. And maybe there's someone out there who is a whistleblower. Maybe there's someone out there who can shed more light on this. And you don't have to give your name, and we don't know where you're calling from. But if you have questions on this, do get a hold of us, because we want to hear from you. And I also want to talk about some of these corporations. Now, people are going to be stunned when they hear these private corporations that are actually doing the work of weather modifications for hire. You know, you might think, oh, well, you know, surely this must be something that hides in the shadows, but they're not. They have websites, and they have price lists and much more. So again, sort of the whole thrust of the show was to bring on the reality that this is going on. And here is where the train is headed. Here is the unfortunate end game, that when you start messing with the weather in one place, it affects the weather in another place. And we might think we're really smart, because we can shift a storm or create a cloud or do all this kinds of cool, weird, funky stuff. And maybe we're doing it for, you know, to bring rain to a drought-stricken area, or maybe it's under the guise of national defense. But what we can't calculate, and what I don't even think that there's a computer model for, is how it's going to affect the world, this butterfly effect, this chaos theory that God knows, you know, when you start tinkering with these forces, can lead to a disaster somewhere else. So we're up against, I think, one of the biggest things facing mankind, and womankind for that matter. My name's Rob Simone. You're listening to Coast AM. Your questions after the break. Yeah, welcome back to Coast AM, and thank you for joining me and my guest, Dane Wigington. And next hour, we're going to bring on Scott Stevens and continue this discussion about weather modification. And is it too late? Has the damage been done? Dane, I wonder what your thoughts are about this idea that what has already been done may have affected the weather in ways we can't even calculate.
You're exactly correct in that statement. And what people need to understand, aside from all the media hype in various directions, very real and tangible and irreparable damage has been done to the planet. There's a lot of sources for this damage, but climate engineering, again, I believe mathematically, is the single greatest factor that has destroyed the Earth's natural life support system. So now we have a methane cataclysm happening in the Arctic right now. Geoengineering changes upper-level wind currents, as we discussed. That changes ocean currents. Now we have ocean currents pumping warm water straight into the Arctic. It's thawing methane hydrate on the seafloor. The methane levels in the upper atmosphere are going off the scale. And this is where the science community, again, lies to us to try to keep the herd calm, if you will. They state methane is 20 times more potent than CO2 as a greenhouse gas. But that's over a 100-year time horizon. Over a 10-year time horizon, methane is 100 times more potent than CO2. Over a several-month horizon, methane can be 1,000 times more potent. It's like covering the planet with a layer of glass. So, yes, climate engineering has done for what amounts to irreparable damage in any time frame that matters, Rob. And so people will see this soon enough. They can be skeptical now. I encourage them to Google Arctic methane emergency. Try to find out data on this. We covered it at geoengineeringwatch.org. Shredded ozone layer, disrupted hydrological cycle, forests that are burning to the ground. Climate engineering is an all-out assault on life on Earth, period. Every breath we take, every bit of our biosphere. That's why I focused on this issue, Rob. In spite of lots of challenges, legitimate challenges that we all face, this is the gaping hole in the bottom of the ship that must be plugged. The climate engineering must be exposed and stopped, or nothing else will matter. It's that simple.
Mm. Well, there is more that is tinkering with this, you know, this weather system and these weather modification technologies. And we've had countless hundreds of nuclear test explosions. And even these bombs that were used in the Gulf Wars that I think blew holes in the upper atmosphere. Tell us about the possible impact of all that.
All of that is a factor here. In fact, any form of anthropogenic activity, i.e. human activity, which includes geoengineering. People don't like that term because they associate it with Al Gore. I'm not a Gore fan either, but that doesn't change reality. So any form of anthropogenic activity, including everything you just mentioned, is a form of geoengineering. Putting 100 million tons of CO2 in the atmosphere a day is also a form of geoengineering. But the planet would have responded in a much different manner if not for geoengineering. As the carbon count went up, rain would have increased. The planet would have tried to respond. But now it couldn't respond because it's in a virtual straitjacket. So Project Starfish, which may be what you're mentioning here, the detonation of hydrogen bombs in the magnetosphere, the military-industrial complex is like a bunch of insane kids in a sandbox with very lethal toys that now are putting all life on Earth at risk. And this is something that simply people must get involved with. We need everybody in this fight, Rob. Credible people. Credibility needs to be retained in this fight. So use the science. If somebody deviates from the science, make sure you investigate the science yourself, because the data is there to back up everything we're saying.
Yeah. No, it's been, 2,000 explosions between 45 and 1998? America has done over 1,000. China's done, 700. France, 200. Britain, 45. I mean, how many times do you have to blow up one of these nuclear devices, either under the water, I mean, which is absurd, or above the ground to know what the thing does? I mean, it's just shocking.
Your point is, I completely relate to that. I bring it up in radio dissertations all the time when people say, well, why would they engineer the climate if they knew it was going to cause such harm? Well, why would they do what you just described? If we're talking about the same power structure, why would they detonate over 2,000 nuclear weapons? Don't they know after a few dozen that they work? But they keep going. Why would they use depleted uranium ammunition?
Oh.
Why would they do 100 other things that they do? So we're not dealing with sanity here.
Yeah. And it's one thing to talk about these things in a bubble. But unfortunately, when you start messing with the weather, you're messing with everybody's weather.
Everybody.
And that comes down to jobs. That comes down to fishing and farming and countless other things.
But guess what? They're making money off all of the above. And they're weather trading derivatives. People need to understand that term. And although we're talking about consequences that put all life on Earth at risk, in the meantime, you have the vultures that are feeding off the carcass. You have weather trading derivatives. So there is literally unquantifiable amounts of money being made off of wherever the drought's going to appear, wherever the flood's going to appear. You have literally those running the climate modification programs connected to what amounts to gambling casinos betting on the weather. I mean, this whole situation is such a tangled web of corruption and insanity, it's difficult to get one's arms around.
But we're doing, I think, a pretty good job in giving people an idea of the scope. Let's take our mini break, and then when we come back, I'll ask you about some of these corporations that are actively involved for hire, and then we'll jump into the phone calls. You're listening to Coast AM.
Tom Baudet trying out this new phrase YOLO, short for you only live once, is when you do something and don't care about the consequences. Like, I'm gonna tear the tags off this mattress. YOLO! Now you can use Google Wallet on your mobile to book a clean, comfortable room for the lowest price of any national chain. YOLO? Pretty fun. I'm Tom Baudet from Motel 6 and Wilt a Loafie. Just hit the Buy with Google button at motel6.com.
Geico Motorcycle presents Reflections from the Road.
Every time I rev my engine down an open stretch of road, I'm glad I switched to Geico Motorcycle Insurance. Because nothing feels better than saving money with Geico. Except maybe the time I saved a life. A squirrel's life. Gave that little feller mouth to mouth, and then he bit me. On second thought, saving money with Geico probably feels better.
Geico Motorcycle Insurance. See how much you could save.
Are you living with pain? I was, after a nasty fall. I got relief with 1 hour pain relief. I'm Barry Yarconi, president. And here's Lisa, a Marine who was injured in Iraq.
After surviving an explosion, I was on horrible painkillers for lingering head, shoulder, back, and knee pain. But I hated the dangers and side effects. My friend told me about 1 hour pain relief, and now I'm off the drugs.
1 hour pain relief is the result of 15 years of research on an amazing extract from hops, the plant used to flavor beer.
Whether your pain is from an injury or just aging, you get safe, all-day relief in less than 1 hour.
Get a free one-week trial for just the small shipping charge. Call 800-500-1810 right now or visit onehourpainrelief.com. There's no gimmicks, no obligation, no automatic shipments. Stop living with pain. Call 800-500-1810 or visit onehourpainrelief.com. That's 800-500-1810. Or onehourpainrelief.com.
Yeah, you are back here on Coast to Coast AM. We're talking with Dane Wigington, his website, geoengineeringwatch.org, which is linked up right now at Coast to Coast AM. And Dane, tell the people about these corporations that sort of do this for hire.
Two categories. Again, one category is nothing but distraction. You have these small private companies that have silver iodide dispersed from small mechanisms in their wings or in the fuselage. And these are not meaningful in any way, shape, or form in comparison to the much more massive climate engineering program. So again, there's a host of smaller private companies that are really red herrings to try to distract from these larger corporations. And in that field, in the arena we're speaking about now, you have the big players in regard to the materials being supplied, Alcoa, Rusal, and on the aluminum futures, by the way, after the climate conferences, Cancun and Copenhagen, the aluminum futures jumped 27%, aluminum primary ingredient in geoengineering patents. So, you know, we see all the dots connecting. You have DOD, Evergreen Aviation, huge company that appears to be involved with the geoengineering programs. We have Battelle, Raytheon, Lockheed Martin. These are the big boys. These are the big players that are involved with the global climate modification programs known as stratospheric aerosol geoengineering, solar radiation management. So all these smaller programs, about 150 in the country every year, Rob, that are publicized, state programs, even county programs, they're virtually meaningless in comparison to the climate engineering mechanism that's in place today.
Okay, well, let's jump into the phones. The phone lines are blowing up here. Let's jump over to west of the Rockies. Jason's in Red Bluff, California. How you doing?
Good. How you doing?
All righty. Welcome to Coast. You're on with Dane Wigington.
Awesome. Yeah, I love what you guys do. Coast to Coast is the greatest. Let me get right to the point. Have you gentlemen heard of these YouTube videos of people all around the world hearing strange noises come from the sky? I mean, they equate it to, like, end times biblical, the horn trumpets, like in the Bible. And if you ever listen to it, it sounds pretty pretty gnarly. Sounds like a giant machine going across the sky. It's all around the world. But nobody's ever said this could be HAARP. Just wondering what your thoughts are on that.
I am familiar with those audio recordings, and it is being heard in a great many places. And I think, although we can't prove this, again, you could have a 50-year chain smoker that dies of lung cancer. You can't prove that that's what killed him. And in the case of them using the ionosphere heaters in the atmosphere and the effect that we would expect, there would be some auditory issues with that as well. So it seems likely that it's connected. Can't prove it.
Yeah, I've seen those videos, and some of them are really, really strange. All right, let's go to the wild card line. Nick is in Amana, Iowa. Welcome to Coast AM.
Yes. I have witnessed over the past 15 years, at least, if not longer, the sun used to be yellow, now it's silver. If anybody really notices, it's probably an unusual thing. Not everyone should notice that. But about a year ago, I witnessed three or four UN planes landing in Cedar Rapids, Iowa. And I feel that it was to protect those airplanes from the storms that occurred after they were spraying. I witnessed a lot of spraying during that time. And I feel that they landed those airplanes to protect the planes from the storms that happened. They were devastating. It was about a year or two ago. But
you bring up an extremely important point, the silvery white skies. And so many people, even anti-geoengineering activists, don't really yet completely understand that geoengineering is so much more than the horizon-to-horizon trails. And now it seems there is an effort to be much more covert about the disbursement. Over Northern California previous summers, we've had horizon-to-horizon trails throughout the summer, have had almost none this year. They're shorter, bright trails. There's still a particular disbursement, but the sky turns ever more silvery white, as you described. The cobweb-type clouds are aerosol clouds. They are not a natural lower-level cumulus cloud. It's aerosol clouds. If the sky is not blue and the clouds are not white, clouds are not defined, where you see these big, drifting, cobwebby-looking, hazy skies, our skies are saturated with aerosols, many different forms of disbursement, so don't just look for the horizon-to-horizon trails. And that silvery white sky, silvery white sun refraction you see, absolutely, that's an atmosphere full of reflective, metallic aerosols. That's what's in the patents. That's what's coming down on the ground. That's what they're doing.
Now, I and many others have seen these things in different countries. What is your take on the international scope of this? Is it one country doing their thing and others doing other things, or is there sort of a, you know, sort of a cooperation going on that is part of a whole global project?
Absolutely. There is collusion on these programs. In fact, I found a photograph from 1968 of the Soviet weather modification scientists touring U.S. weather modification facilities at the height of the Cold War. Absolutely, all the major powers are covering each other on these programs, and it is absolutely global in scope. In fact, one example of that, Rob, we have a study from 2010 that surveyed 1,000 whales from the most remote places on the planet. They tested for inorganics at the last minute, and the study says, and I quote, the whales contained jaw-dropping levels of aluminum in their tissues. There's nowhere to hide from what we're all inhaling, what we're all absorbing. That whale study absolutely proves it. So, again, the scope and scale of this is total. And you correctly said, Rob, when you affect part of the system, you affect all the system, period. And this is definitely going on around the globe, over the poles. Very heavy geoengineering going on over the poles for a number of reasons right now. All of it, in the end, very destructive, but nowhere to hide.
Where can people find that report?
They can Google that. In fact, they can Google, it's posted on Geoengineering Watch. I had to find the section, but if they Google whales show high levels of aluminum, they'll absolutely find it.
Okay. Let's go east of the Rockies. Jeff is in Houston, Texas. You're on with Dane Wigington.
Hi, a few things. The first is, I've got a question. It seems to be barium and aluminum oxides that the spectrum photography says that are being dropped behind the planes. And I was just wondering what those chemicals would do. Second, I was wondering what sort of frequencies HAARP would be sending up to modify the weather. If it's microwaves, there's something known as microwave auditory effect that can be causing that screaming or trumpet sounds that people are talking about. And also, I'm listening to a book called State of Fear by Michael Crichton, and it says that the highest temperature for the last couple hundred years was in 1934, and the lowest were in the 1970s. And so when people talk about, you know, weather change or global warming, you know, they're really not looking at it, at all the effects. What they could do is there was all this concern about nukes in Charleston Harbor, but realistically, all that they would need is a depth charge in some harbor like New York or Boston or wherever, and it would create a huge tidal tsunami, very focused because of the slant of the seawall and the way it focuses the waves, you know, together and up the river.
If I could dive into that before I lose track of the beginning of the questions, I want to answer as many of that your questions as I can. Aluminum and barium, why would they use aluminum? Aluminum has a very high albedo, very high reflectivity, very low coagulation rate. And so this is, again, where you have a red herring, where a lot of the geoengineering data talks about distributing sulfur particles. Complete red herring, as said on the record by internationally recognized geoengineer David Keith, this is on film and on the record, the alumina is the material of choice because, again, of the high albedo, the radiative forcing effect. It's much more effective for deflecting sunlight, also trapping radiant heat, so and a low coagulation rate. So that's the aluminum use. That's as stated in patents. Barium, you have patents for barium clouds. You also have, in the case of artificial ice nucleation, barium hydroxide, which is part of artificial ice nucleation patents and processes. You mentioned the frequencies, the ELF frequencies, certainly associated with HARP. I mean, there can be a number of variances there that we really can't know. On the state of the climate, I'm going to have to wrangle with you on that one, that any notion that the climate is not heating is incorrect. And geoengineering alone is making a bad situation exponentially worse, as even stated by NOAA. The high-level clouds, which they don't refer to as particular clouds, even acknowledged by NOAA, making things worse. The temperature records around the globe, people can verify, other than the eastern U.S. The eastern U.S. is 5% of Earth's surface area, 5%. Yes, it's cool in the eastern U.S. because that's a massive epicenter of geoengineering. Other than that, climate engineering is triggering mechanisms that is putting the planet into meltdown, along with a lot of other factors as well. So the planet right now is warming at the rate of 4 Hiroshima bombs every second. People can Google, I encourage you, every single word I said, including the last statement, on the rate of warming. So climate engineering is putting us from the frying pan into the fire, and the bottom line is these materials they're using, they have no regard for the consequences, the fallout, the human health effects, and in fact, this is all verifiable data. My only goal, Rob, is to get people to investigate. My only goal.
Well, you said HARP uses ELF, but I was under the impression that all their stuff was like 2-3 gigahertz, like in the microwave band.
Well, you know, I've communicated with Nick Baggage about this, and there's a lot of other data surrounding this as well. So, you know, I'm not going to stand on that. I would encourage people to investigate, but those frequencies, the extra low frequencies, the mm-hmm. ELF frequencies, are associated with various ionosphere heater installations.
Oh, interesting.
So,
okay.
Anyway, again, people can corroborate that as well. So, and the materials that we're talking about, aluminum and barium, all listed in numerous patents. In fact, we have a list of 150 patents on geoengineeringwatch.org. Can't get a patent unless it works. So, again, there's so much data there, Rob, that people are not looking at.
Okay. So these HARP installations are capable of all kinds of the whole scale of RF radio
again,
frequencies.
Again, there's a lot.
Interesting.
We know we have certain data, but we can't corroborate that data. It's just like, are these drones or are these piloted aircraft? Mm-hmm. We can speculate. We know the technology is there for drones, but we can't know that unless we're inside the cockpit. So
right.
A lot of variables. I like to stand on what we can say for certain. And we can say for certain that we know that what we see in the sky matches the climate engineering patents, solar obscurations blocking the sun. We have the data to prove it. We know the materials falling to the ground match the geoengineering patents exactly.
Mm-hmm.
So we have congressional documents and so forth, geoengineering, global governance. I mean, there's a mountain of data to corroborate the reality of these programs.
Yeah, let's see if we can get a quick one in.
Yep.
Wildcard line. Rick from Reno. Welcome.
Yes.
Got a quick one?
Gentlemen, considering the elements aluminum, barium, and strontium, I'd like to know if, in your research, have you found that they are coating any of these elements with fiberglass so that it can cause the body to be unable to chelate these things out of the body, and is strontium the isotope 90 so that the body cannot distinguish it from calcium and therefore ingest it into the bones? And I'd like to follow up, if I may.
Well, we're going to have to hold it there, and let's come back and answer that question, because that's a doozy. So, Rick, stay right there, and we will contemplate this biological question that you have posed. We're talking about geoengineering. We're talking about manipulating the weather, and that's really the crux of what the show is all about. And we're talking with Dane Wigington, and we're going to have to maybe hold him over and get an answer to that and bring on Scott Stevens and continue this dialogue. And I'm glad that you're with me, because this show, I think, leads to a lot of questions, even bigger questions. This is Coast to Coast AM, and we'll be right back after the break.